Before we start today's show, I just wanted to mention that January 20th, 2016 marks the 13-year anniversary of Craig Kelly's fatal avalanche in Revelstoke, BC. I often find myself asking questions about Craig when I'm interviewing people because he had such an enormous impact on the sport's formative years. 20 years ago, I rode up Chair 5 at Mount Baker with Craig, and he was incredibly friendly and rode incredibly fast. I don't know what else to say, but thanks, Craig. Welcome to the Effin' Red Snowboarding Podcast. I'm Eric Charlson, and this is Episode 8.
Yeah, I didn't start even riding until I was 65 years old.
The first board I rode was this plastic Sims Lonnie Toff with a skate deck.
Snowboarding is exactly the same as it used to be. It's just, you know, everybody wants something from it.
I don't know if I can endure any more shitty winters.
We're going to be okay, you know, and that's all that matters.
You can put it away for a while, but you can't put it away forever because it's just almost like a spiritual thing.
This year marks the 20th anniversary of the Boarding for Breast Cancer series of events. Please check out b4bc.org for a complete history of the organization and a list of special events happening this year to celebrate 20 years of awesome. This week's guest, Tina Basich, helped found the organization, which advocates early detection and a healthy, active, sustainable lifestyle. They promote lifelong wellness through outreach, prevention, sustainability, and support programs. Tina was arguably the most recognized competitive women snowboarder in the late 80s and throughout the 90s. She started competing professionally in 86 and had an impressive 20-year pro career with highlights including X Games gold in the Big Air. She's the first woman to land a 720 in competition, and she also had the first women's pro model. She took a step back from competing after breaking her leg. She wrote an autobiography in 2003 entitled Pretty Good for a Girl, and she's kept on shredding. The Full Moon crew posted pics of Tina at Baldface earlier this season getting at it in the POW. Tina was incredibly rad and called us up to talk about the early days.
I started snowboarding in the winter of 84-85, and my first board was an Elite 140. It was made by Burton, and it had three fins on the back and a little cutout in the tail, and it had the red tall high backs. They almost went to the back of my knees, and it had kind of seatbelt clips that went over for the bindings. And I had that board for about a year before I upgraded and started borrowing boards of a, I had a Kidwell there for a while, and then I went right into a pocket knife. That board really changed how I rode. It had metal edges, and the bindings were more functional. That was the, you know, when we started doing cross rockets and tail grabs and stuff. It was a family event, but my mom and dad didn't do it, and we weren't a ski family, so we started because we were kind of skateboarder kids, so we kind of crossed over to see what snowboarding was all about. It was very scarce, so if we saw other snowboarders, we would go up and talk to them. There were very few resorts that allowed it. Donner Ski Ranch and Soda Springs were the ones near me. Homewood was also allowing people on the lift. So at that time, it was me and my brother and my girlfriend from school, and then we ran into some snowboarders at Donner. Mike Jacoby was one of them, and Tucker Franson and Chris Roach. So that was kind of the start of it, with Dave Cioni and the Avalanche crew, Damian Sanders and Dana Nicholson and all those guys. So it was a blast. I got quick exposure because I was one of the only girls out there, and my brother was doing it all along, competing in the junior division for a while before he went pro. For me, the second contest I was in, we had more than three girls, so we divided up and had a pro division. Like, it wasn't that I chose to be amateur for this many years and then you were pro. Like, there was only so many of us, so we just went for it. And, you know, I was still winning a sweatshirt, but I was pro snowboarder, which is just about the coolest thing to be. GoScape was my first sponsor, and then I went to the World Championship in 87 in Colorado at Breckenridge, and the Tahoe crew, a lot of people went out for it, and I remember Mike Chantry telling me to meet up with the Sims crew, and I met Dave Weaver and Brad, and those guys hooked me up with a free board, so then I was sponsored by Sims. Then in around 1990 or 89, shortly after that contest, Kemper Snowboards was starting, and I got on that team. Yep, and then I went back to Sims. In 94, me and Shannon both came out with our pro models. She was on Sims, and I was on Kemper. And then she switched to Burton, and I switched to Sims in 95. Yeah, and then I continued and had pro models up till 2002, I think, or 2001. So we all started when we were teenagers. And so we were going out and, you know, doing the scene. But then the second that a 14-year-old kid on a snowboard named Sean Wyatt started beating Pudge Richards, who was 26 or whatever, you know, we were older, that's when it all started shifting. And it was also because of the equipment. Like, I grew up snowboarding, and every single change each year made me a better snowboarder. But these kids grew up on a snowboard that was built for them when they were 4 years old or 6 years old or 8 years old. They didn't have to ride a big old board and wait to design women's equipment. Like, so their progression happened a little bit faster. So that's when all the up-and-comers started popping up, and the people that had enough options to take other routes and TV shows and broadcasting for NBC and, you know, things like that. Like, I took every opportunity I could to continue to be part of snowboarding, have snowboarding in my life. I enjoyed it for sure the whole way through, and I value each part of it for different reasons. Like, in the beginning, that whole thing was just like, it was new. We were misfits. We were artists. We didn't care. You know, like, nobody believed that what we were doing was something real. So we were just making our mark. And that kind of went through the women's equipment and, you know, being a strong female rider. And then it kind of transitioned into, whoa, you know, my year I took off of college is still going, and it's 12 years later, you know, this is my career. And then I would take every option to preserve that and make sure I could keep snowboarding, because that's what I love to do. But it had different moments. I think when the pressure really set in is when I won the X Games. Then I started to have that feeling like, oh my gosh, everybody thinks I'm going to win now, instead of like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen. So I had some pressure of like coming back and progressing at a faster pace, because everybody around me was starting to push their limits faster and faster to keep up with everybody. But I broke my leg in 99, and that slowed me right down. So I'm very happy to look back and know that I survived a 20-year of snowboarding career with minimal damage. Because, I mean, it's a dangerous sport. I look at the sport now and think, wow, to win a women's half-pipe contest, you're really risking your life. Where, you know, I won a contest when I did a rocket air at the bottom kicker and was 6 inches out of the pipe, you know. So times have changed. It was definitely a perfect scenario for somebody who was just leaving home and off for an adventure, because, you know, a couple years into the growth of snowboarding and my sponsorships, I was having my expenses all paid for, and I was traveling all year round. So all of my salary money and contest winnings and everything I got to put in the bank, and I was really good about it. And I was feeling like it was a career, but also not calling it that, because that wasn't cool. We were just snowboarding because we loved it. You know, like, it meant we got to keep snowboarding. So it wasn't a job. It was my dream life.
Tina's brother, Mikey Bassich, is an equally accomplished snowboarder who we hope to interview in a future episode.
Yeah, Michael and I traveled together quite closely on the World Cup tour. So we'd end up in Europe together and Japan together. We were on different teams there, so we ended up at different photo shoots and things, but we'd always end up at Mount Hood in the summertime, and we would not skip a holiday. So we were always home for Christmas. We were always jet-lagged, because there was always a big errand style right before Christmas. We kind of had a routine where we were home for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then sometimes we'd be snowboarding POW on Easter and in Alaska, and we would go home in between. We traveled out of home for a while, and then we all moved to Utah together in the 90s, and now we're back both close to our parents. Yeah, he has a great spot there. Our whole family went up there to celebrate fall. I think it was Homewood that upgraded their chairlift to a quad, and he bought the chairlift and installed it at his property. But there wasn't enough snow this last year to run it, because it's pretty far off the ground. But hopefully it'll snow this year. Yep. Everybody pitched in. We were collecting rocks for like 5 years. pretty crazy. Yep, I have an 8-year-old daughter. Her name's Addison, and she went snowboarding for the first time yet last year, and she's going to be quite a snowboarder girl. And, yep, she knows Michael as Uncle Mikey. And, yeah, we just went up to his property and had a camp out. But we're all pretty tight. Family's pretty important. You know, it's top of our list, so we make it a priority. No, I didn't do the Olympics. By the time it got accepted, halfpipe got accepted, I had already started doing freestyle and backcountry stuff, so I had kind of shifted my focus, so I kind of missed it on the timing of where my career was at, and I started doing the big air at the X Games and things like that. But it was fine. It was, at the time, it was a little overwhelming that that was even a possibility. It didn't fit into the path that I was on, but I enjoyed watching all my friends go. My daughter's giving me the look for, I got to get my daughter to dinner. You're welcome. Yeah, let me know where everything ends up. All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye.
F and Rad wants to thank Tina for talking to us. Please go to the b4bc.org website and get up to speed with this worthy cause. And cross your fingers for our latest attempt to get the podcast on iTunes. Also, our very first live show will be February 19th at Chair 9 in Glacier, Washington, and we couldn't be more stoked. Come join us to kick off the Mount Baker Legendary Bank Slalom. Thanks again to Evan Cam for the music in today's episode. Go check out Heat Rock Studios for some more original Whistler music. F and Rad Snowboarding Podcast is brought to you by BR Productions.